Species.
Unite.
Species.
Unite.
One day I was leaving the animal shelter, and I would always go and have lunch at this restaurant down the street, and I'd get this pork barbecue sandwich. I remember it so vividly. I can remember the booth I was sitting in. I can picture the place. And I just remember thinking, I spent all day, you know, helping these, or all morning helping this one animal, and then now I'm eating another animal.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show. This conversation is with Stephanie Downs. Stephanie is a CEO and co-founder of Uncaged Innovations. Uncaged is a biomaterials company that combines nature and technology to reimagine leather. After 2 years in stealth mode, they have launched a non-animal bio-leather that could transform the fashion and automotive industries. Stephanie's career has been one of transformation. She is a co-founder of the Material Innovation Initiative and the largest plant-based meat company in India. Hi, Steph.
Hi, how are you today?
I am fantastic. Thank you for having me in your home. I want to talk about Uncaged, which is mind-blowing. So why don't you just say what it is, and then we're going to work our way back up to it.
Uncaged Innovations is a bio leather company. So we are making leather out of various plant ingredients for the fashion, automotive, and home goods industries.
And you just launched.
Yes, we just launched this month. We've been in stealth mode for about 2 years and have just started engaging with brands and being a bit more public about what we're doing.
I've just seen samples of what you're doing, and it is absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
We're going to get to that, and we're going to get to like why we need these materials in the world everywhere and why all fashion and all cars and home goods need these materials. But I want to go back and talk a little bit about your story, because I know your story and I love it. Let's just start with how and where you grew up.
Yeah, so I grew up in a tiny town in central Illinois, and in most places in the world, they would call it a village. It was about 1,000 people, farm community. I'm actually the third generation of my family in this tiny town.
And you were obviously, like, what was your relationship? Food, animals?
Honestly, well, from a food standpoint, never thought about it. You know, I grew up in a generation, you know, I was a teenager in the 80s. My parents fed us things like SpaghettiO and raviolis and Twinkies, which now almost seems criminal in hindsight. Those were so unhealthy. And then with animals, you know, we had a dog when I was growing up. And I once asked my mom years ago, it was when I first started getting involved in animal welfare. I asked my mom, do you remember something that happened like as a kid? Did I rescue a little bird? Or something that kind of started to trigger it. And she paused and she said, I can't remember anything like that. But what I do remember was when you were about 5 and you came home from Sunday school and you were just bawling and you were so mad at God because he let all of the animals drown except 2 of each kind. And she's like, I just kept saying they didn't sin. You know, I don't remember any specific moment, but just kind of, you know, always had a soft spot for, in general, the underdog.
But there's no like vegan, vegetarian talk anywhere in your world.
No, nothing close. I grew up in a hunting community. And even eventually I married somebody who was a hunter. My dad did stop hunting when I was a kid because I would get so mad at him for killing Bambi. But yeah, no, I just never even stopped to think about it.
What happened?
For me, the gateway was volunteering at an animal shelter. So I started my first company in 1999. My background's all in business. And then I started my first company about 5 years after college. And I don't know, I kind of had this thought in my mind that, you know, when you got to a certain point financially, that, you know, certain things that you had in life, and you know, then that was going to be what happiness was going to look like. And I remember I was driving home one day, and it just dawned on me that I'd worked so hard to get to this point, and I was not even the tiniest bit happier. You know, if anything, I'd created this huge weight that was on my shoulders that now I had to carry, you know, of this lifestyle. And so I did a lot of thinking and journaling, and decided what I needed to do was give back. And if I did that, then that was the final piece of this euphoric puzzle that I was looking for. And so I started looking around for volunteer opportunities and ended up volunteering in an animal shelter. And that was the beginning of it for me. I went there just to walk dogs and hug some puppies. Next thing I know, I'm on the board of directors. I'm running the annual fundraiser. You know? God forbid I could just keep it simple. But I was kind of hooked by this feeling of giving back. And so what I thought was just going to be this tiny piece of the puzzle actually ended up being the whole puzzle, and just fell in love with that. One day I was leaving the animal shelter, and I would always go and have lunch at this restaurant down the street, and I'd get this pork barbecue sandwich. I remember it so vividly. I can remember the booth I was sitting in. I can picture the place. And I just remember thinking, I spent all day, you know, all morning helping this one animal, and then now I'm eating another animal. And so then Googled some videos, and some PETA videos came up, and that then rolled into being vegetarian. And then I saw Earthlings, and that caused me to go vegan.
I love those moments so much, though, where you're just like, you can remember it, and you're like, wait, what am I doing?
Yeah, it literally feels like a light bulb, you know, like it's like a cartoon, but it's a moment.
And I mean, all humans are different, and it takes different things, you know, to affect us. But it is interesting that just some people, I mean, there are tons of people that work in animal-related jobs all over the country who never have that moment, right? Like, you see it all the time. Like, it's the animal shelters, you know, barbecue or whatever, that kind of thing. Right, that happens a lot. I'm always curious about, like, what it takes, like, what makes that moment. Like, some people just have it. And it's kind of the moment of no turning back.
Yeah.
Right?
You can't unthink it.
No. No. Not at all.
Yeah. So although I will say, you know, I first tried to go vegetarian, and I just ate a ton of pasta, and that was, you know, it wasn't feeling so good. And so then I fell off the wagon, and then, it was a couple tries, but then it stuck. So I'm really glad. Couldn't be more thankful that I volunteered at that animal shelter, because it sent me down a great path.
As you went vegetarian and then vegan, how did the rest of your life change?
Right around the time that I went vegan, it was around 2008, and I was definitely, I would say it was weighing on me even more that I really wanted to do something to give back. And another moment that I had was I had a client who was not a very nice person. And I remember sitting in a meeting and watching him just berate his team. And I thought, you know what I do for a living? I make rich jerks richer. That's what I do. And I just wanted to get off that bandwagon. So I actually kind of set the company up so that I could step away from it, and I could go start spending more of my time on finding a way to give back. And then I started helping animal welfare groups, doing kind of corporate outreach, where I would kind of go in as that voice of reason, so to speak, and I'd go in and talk about, you know, from a business standpoint, like the risks of having animals in your supply chain, or how by transitioning to alternatives, you could actually improve the bottom line. And, you know, I kind of looked at it from a different angle, or I'd go in and meet with mainly big fashion brands, and automotive was where most of my focus was. And I would take in alternatives, you know, faux furs, and I would go out and do the groundwork to kind of find really better quality ones that were, that would appeal to them. And then I'd go in and bring those alternatives. But I worked on all kinds of things. I worked on glue trap issues. I worked on getting one of the first humane slaughter systems installed in the United States.
Which is so cool. And you just, like, unless you're in it, like, I don't think the general public is aware, like, how smart and broad, like, the amount of work and detail that goes into so much of the work.
Yeah, often animal welfare groups will work with companies in a very collaborative way until they just can't anymore. You know what I mean? They'll go in and do the best they can. And yeah, no, it was really interesting. But I personally enjoyed being that person who was, I had great relationships with the brands, right? Because they knew I was trying to, you know, come at it from their perspective, and, you know, and realize that they didn't want to hurt animals. They had businesses to run. Maybe as a brand been doing something for a long time, and we needed to give them ways to move to alternatives. And that's where I personally got very interested in this concept of, you know, developing things that make it easy for companies and consumers to transition.
Okay, so you're doing all this. How do you end up in India?
Right. I love that story. So I, you know, sold my first company in 2014 and then took about a year off and was just doing some traveling and enjoying myself. And then I got bored with that very quickly, but I really didn't intend to start another company. And then I had a friend, Bruce Friedrich. He was starting an organization called the Good Food Institute. And when I heard about it, I mean, it was before it was even anybody, you know, I think they had like a one-page brochure about what they were going to be doing. It was very early days. And I reached out and I said, oh, Bruce, this is really cool. You know, like, how could I help? I could coach entrepreneurs or I could, you know, I'd love to somehow help out. And he says, well, what we'd really like you to do, Steph, is start a company. And we have a venture capital arm that's, you know, kind of a sister organization and they, you know, they might look at putting the money in. And I was like, that's just not an offer that you get very often. And so I was like, well, that's really interesting. So then I literally did about a 6-month kind of just getting myself more familiar with, you know, the space, because I'd eaten these food, you know, plant-based meats and cheeses and things for a long time, but I'd never looked at it from a business opportunity. And then as I looked around, I literally went around the world and went and met with companies in Europe and Asia. And a couple guys from India had emailed the Good Food Institute saying they'd been trying to get something going for a couple years in India and wondered if GFI might be able to help. And so they put us together and I stopped in India. And yeah, so that's kind of how it came to be. And the reason that I really wanted to do it is I'd done a little bit of work in India for Humane Society International. And so I'd had some experience working there, but nothing like what I ended up doing. But yeah, so I just felt that nothing was really going on in India, not like we had in America with Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods and Miyoko's. You know, there was already some things were already happening here. Nothing was really happening. There was maybe like 5 or so smaller ones there. And I personally like was excited about it because I felt like here's an opportunity to like plant some seeds and like get more going. And so that was kind of my mission.
When you came into it, it was already an established company
No? It was an idea. Yeah.
It was an idea.
Just like a couple of people who wanted to do something. Yeah.
And then how did you do this?
Yeah. Like, so the company I ended up eventually starting there was called Good Dot. And they, in India, they refer to people as veg and non-veg. And you really fall into a category, you know, and so I would talk to veg and non-veg and like kind of talk about this concept of plant-based meats and what do you think? And across the board, I got really interesting, positive reactions. And so it just felt right. So everything about it, doing something there just felt like the right time. And I'm so thankful because, you know, we really went big. We built out of the gate, we built a 25,000 square foot factory. And within 18 months, we were a PowerPoint idea on PowerPoint to forming a team, doing the R&D, building a factory and a nationwide launch across India. We actually did our launch event in a stadium of 10,000 people.
It's incredible.
So yeah, it was a whirlwind, but I'm just so thankful because now there's just a huge movement there. And I think we played a part in getting that going.
Is Good Dot still around?
It is. Yeah. Okay. So our first product that we brought to market was mutton, which is the second most popular meat in India. And by the way, the reason it was called Good Dot is everything in India has to be marked with a red dot or a green dot on it to designate whether it's veg or non-veg. So I mean, toothpaste, everything, anything you're going to put into your body, lotion, has to be marked. So our logo was a green dot, but then it said Good Dot.
Okay,
cool.
To kind
of make the point that it even goes a step beyond vegetarian.
How cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely a life-changing experience.
So then you're like, okay, I'm on to the next thing. Knocking them out of the park,
you know,
left and right.
Definitely living between two continents and very culturally different, you know, it was definitely a little trying on the body. And as I was also doing a lot of the travel for us to meet with investors or to speak at conferences. And so, yeah, so I decided to exit the venture. I sold my shares to the other two co-founders. And then I decided I wanted to turn my focus back to the material space. And mainly because there's just, you know, I knew from the work that I'd done when I was working with fashion and automotive brands that for, you know, a decade or so now, we've been hearing about lots of kind of next gen materials that are coming up on the leather side. But there's just various reasons that things weren't quite getting to market at scale. You know, you can't really go to the shopping, you know, you can't really go to many stores now and buy something. So I wanted to turn my focus back to materials.
Before we even get to your materials, because I've had people on to talk about materials before, but it's a really hard concept for people who aren't really in this space or thinking about this space
right.
A lot. Because when most people in the world hear vegan materials, they're still thinking the 90s.
Right,
they're thinking plastic and pleather and, right? And the difference in the materials that are up and coming and happening now in your materials is so drastic. But also at the same time, what I want you to talk about too is the fact that even the crappiest of crap vegan leather is still better for the planet,
definitely,
animals, human, everything, workers, right, than any animal product. Yes.
Yeah, so I'll start there because I think that's something that we just, you know, we're not the message isn't getting out quite as much. So yeah, for the most part, things that you'd look at in the 80s, you know, versus now, and even now, most of the things, like if you go out and buy a vegan wallet or a watch band or something now, 99.9% chance that it's a completely synthetic leather, which is fossil fuel, you know, petroleum-based PU plastic. And the reason that, you know, even though that's in many ways not good, at least the end of life of it is what would not be good. But when you look at PU leathers versus animal leathers, the environmental impact leading up to the end of life is significantly better. You know, as far as the amount of water usage, land usage, chemicals, human rights issues, animal welfare. I mean, it's just PU leather, plastic leather, so to speak, is still much more environmentally better from that standpoint. But then of course the end of life is not great if it's going to take hundreds of,
right,
you know, thousands of years.
But I think a lot of people don't get that. They don't.
Yeah. I think that, you know, there's a lot of beating the drum against the plastic leathers, the vegan leathers. And then to answer your question also around what's different about what we're doing is there's kind of a perfect storm, in the fashion industry for sure. And also automotive, where they're kind of getting hit from both directions. So there are issues, you know, especially around cattle, or exotic skins, where even though it's not said enough, there still is a lot of pressures around the issues of animal farming, you know, environmentally, and especially on things like exotic animal skins, where they're raised for their skin. I mean, the meat is by far a byproduct. They are getting pressure from that side. There's issues with undercover investigations, just, you know, and the brands know, like they know the realities of the tanning process. That's the thing. Even if we, you know, if we took a hide, like if an animal were slaughtered and that hide were just then used on a bag, that might make it a byproduct. Or at least a co-product, it makes up about 5% of the profit of the cow, the hide does. But it has to go through the tanning process, which is extremely water intensive, lots of chemicals, lots of challenges. So the brands are facing that challenge. And then the other challenge is their alternatives that they can turn to of the traditional vegan leathers have bad end of life. They're kind of getting hit from both sides, which is then kind of pushing them, you know, creating this demand for the types of materials that we're working on. And there's others in the space too, that are bio-based leathers. We refer to ours as bio leather, that are made of plant ingredients. Some people are working on collagens. Then that way we can have a good end of life, but we also can avoid using the animal.
Right. So first and foremost, bio leather.
That's what we refer to our materials, but we, in a general term.
But that should become the term instead of vegan leather or something,
right,
to differentiate.
I agree.
Like something needs to differentiate, because I find myself explaining this to so many people and it's hard for people to grasp, and because it's on a scale, right? Like it's still not an animal product.
Right.
But it's a much better non-animal product than anything most people have seen.
Yeah. Yeah. And there is, you know, I'll throw in a plug here real quick for an organization that I'm involved with called the Material Innovation Initiative. I know you're good friends with Nicole. You know, I think that's some of the types of challenges that MII's, you know, working on taking on. What's the right terminology? How do we talk to the consumers about some of these things? Because the messaging is very confusing, especially around the plastic challenges.
Yeah. So you decide, I'm going to be a pioneer in the bio leather space.
Right. Yeah. So it was, and then I connected with a couple scientists and we kind of went to work. And what we kind of wanted to really focus on was two main things. Is one is creating something that could be, was going to be able to get to market faster. Because the challenges I see right now, and if we look at us versus others in the space, is performance. You know, a lot of the brands are having performance issues with some of the next-gen leathers that are out there. And then we're running into scalability issues where the materials just aren't scaling. Like a lot of people tell you, we'd like to use this, but we can't get it.
The demand is huge.
The demand is insane. Like, I mean, I honestly, one of the reasons I wanted us to stay in stealth mode for a couple years is the demand is insane, you know? So I did a LinkedIn post a couple weeks ago, and my calendar is filled for like 4 weeks, like with calls and, you know,
with fashion brands and car companies
and investors and I mean, it's a great problem to have, but as a small innovator, you've got to kind of manage that. But yeah, so what we've done is a bit different in that we designed our material around a formula. So we wanted to have something that could be really customizable. So we have about 10 different ingredients that we bring together. And then we're also working on ways that we can scale it very quickly so that we're like, you saw some of our pieces today.
Very beautiful.
So we're already, you know, starting to work on, you know, manufacturing the material. So it's really, we're really excited where we've got to in a short period of time.
Okay. Go back. When you say, okay, so I got together with a couple scientists, what did you do?
Leather is a complicated material, right?
Yeah.
Like the reality is it works well for its function. It's strong. It has some stretch to it, which is important. It's flexible. It has a certain hand feel that's luxurious, you know, in people's mind is a luxurious feel, right? So we have to replicate that. It also has a certain smell. So we kind of looked at what are the characteristics of leather and then what are different biomaterials that we could bring together that bring that type of characteristic, because different plants have different characteristics. Most of the companies have chosen to focus on one key ingredient, you know, so whether it's cactus, you know, how can we take cactus and make it act like leather? How can we take mushrooms, or how can we take wine peels, or grape peels, excuse me. What we decided to do was instead kind of step back and like say, let's look at hundreds of different biomaterials, whether it's collagen, like we work with recombinant collagens that can be grown in the lab. We worked with algaes and, you know, grain byproducts and, you know, just hundreds of things. And like, let's try and combine them in different concentrations. You know, let's use 5 different ingredients, each at 20%, and see what happens. And then let's tweak that. And then we would run it through a battery of different tests to kind of see what was performing. And, you know, just over time, we started to find these winners. So so the brilliant scientists on the team, I should say my CTO and co-founder, Jacoon Wang, she's my secret weapon.
She's like back in the lab, like a little bit of grapes, a little grape, a little collagen.
Oh, yeah, she's always, and that's the advantage of a startup versus like, you know, a big company is we can read an article about something and I can text her and say, hey, we should try this ingredient. Like, what about this? And we recently actually were looking into something around dandelion. Like there's a certain type of dandelion extract that might be an interesting, you know, component. And so we're constantly innovating, but she's definitely I feel like she deserves all the credit for the innovation.
So, and then the stuff the two of you have come up with, is it one like super bio leather, or do you have a few different ones for different things?
We do have different ones for different things. And, you know, we are still in R&D, so we're still putting the, you know, the finishing touches on things, and I'm sure we'll constantly be innovating. But, you know, the first one we're bringing to market is like what they call a smooth leather or flat leather.
What kind of products do we get with this?
The initial starting point will be in the fashion industry, for sure. There's just the most demand is there, although we have had various automotive companies already reach out to us in the last month. And so we're engaged with them too. And then the third one will really be home goods, you know, home decor.
People never think about home goods either.
They don't think about it. Uh-uh. And, you know, it's interesting. I've had some conversations recently where people told me they think that industry is more ready for it than we might realize, because I guess sustainability is also really bubbling up as a topic there.
Right.
But in fashion, it's the topic, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, it is the hot time on the topic of sustainability, and the brands are just, they're just looking for this like aggressively. And that's the thing, you know, with everybody in this space and, you know, other next gen companies in the space, there's so much room for all of us. I mean, animal leather, you know, the bovine leather industry is an $80 billion industry. The synthetic leather, you know, the like plastic leather industry is over $30 billion. It's a huge industry. So I mean, there's a ton of opportunity.
Okay. So now I want to talk about scaling and how that works. You create these like potions in the lab of all these vegetables and fruits and collagens, and then you end up with leather.
Yeah.
But how does this scale? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So, you know, we're also taking a new unique approach there. So, well, I should say, first of all, the first thing you do is you develop these swatches that are about like, if you get like the first one was like the size of my thumb, and I was, you know, just ecstatic, you know, like we're going to like put, we have it like in a little glass jar, you know?
I love it.
And then you go from there and you keep getting a little bigger, and you know, the size of a post-it note, and then you keep getting a little bigger, and then you run a battery of different tests and you keep refining. And then the next step is you go on to pilot equipment. So for us in particular, like, so we have worked very hard to design stuff that we could scale with manufacturing partners who have equipment that we can scale this on, as opposed to having to build our own factories. Because that was something that I felt I saw others in the industry facing as a challenge, because you have to raise hundreds of millions of dollars and takes years to build factories. Yeah. And you know, we saw it in the food space, right? As I'd mentioned, in India, we had to build our own factory, because you know, I looked high and low in India for the types of equipment that we needed, and it just didn't exist. And you know, so that's when you're working on something that's novel, it can be really hard. And so what we did going into this was we just kind of, every week in our R&D team meetings, we would watch different videos about different types of manufacturing techniques, just to like start to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To give the scientific team, because they were very much like lab scientists, not necessarily manufacturing scientists, you know? So we would just kind of look at different things and say, okay, well, that's interesting. Or, you know, everything from extruders to, you know, all kinds of different equipment, to start to give them an understanding of what kind of equipment's out there that we might be able to tap into.
Cool.
Yeah, we should be able to scale pretty quickly. And we're already working with contract manufacturing partners.
And so this is it. From here on out, it's just like scale and grow and keep like trying different recipes.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, somebody asked me recently in an interview, like, so what's next for you? And I'm like, this is it. Like, this is it. I'm giving this everything I've got. I was like, and it's going to take, you know, years. And that's the thing with the fashion and automotive. I mean, it's years of relationships. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As far as like, if we engage right now with a fashion brand, it'll be at a minimum 18 months before you'd see something, you know what I mean? Come to fruition, except for, you know, with smaller brands. And then automotive, we're looking at probably 3 years.
So when this stuff gets scaled, like bio leathers and next gen leathers, for the automotive industry, there's no reason they'll ever use animal leather again at that point.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons that I also wanted to, when I was thinking about the opportunities in the material space, that I was excited about it having come from the food space, even though I think we've just made monumental strides there and that's only going to continue to grow. I do think as a planet, we will be wearing and sitting on and sleeping on all vegan materials before the planet is vegan, you know, because it's something that the world's ready for. You know, I mean, there's not a lot of, even like, for example, with the automotive companies, some of the ones that are using, you know, more of the traditional vegan leathers in their interiors, they just call it performance fiber.
Right.
You know, and the consumer feels it. It's luxurious. It looks nice, you know, and so there just aren't as many barriers. And I think 10, 15 years from now, if people were still using leather in automotive, I'd be surprised.
And fashion too.
Yeah. I mean, I think the fashion, there's always, you know, if somebody pays $70,000 for a Birkin bag, you know,
there's always going to be like weird.
Yeah. There's certain outliers, I think, that are going to be slow, you know, that they're going to take a while to change. But I think that, yeah, we're just going to see such a drastic change once these products can scale and price. So that's the other thing, you know, performance, scale, and price. Those are the three things that we have to start hitting more as an industry to really start to see the tipping point.
And that's the last thing I want to ask you about, because I didn't even think about it. And it's so funny. It's one of my first thoughts with food. But what about price?
Yeah. So, I mean, price is something that I think has really caused challenges with as far as brands adopting some of these materials, because they're very expensive. You know, one of the CEOs of one of the mushroom leather companies recently was speaking at an event and said that their product is about $30 a square foot, which is close to $300 a square meter, which is about six times more than fashion brands. You know, most fashion brands pay for their leather. So I think that for us, you know, we're still in R&D, so we're still, you know, refining it, but you know, we're definitely targeting the price of leather, and I feel pretty confident, especially once we're at scale, that we'll be there.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. Thank you so much, Steph. This is really exciting. And I just want everybody on the planet to understand what's coming.
Yeah. No, we're going to see such a huge shift, I think, in fashion and automotive and in all the way, not just leather. I think leather, wool, fur, silk, all the different ways that we use animals in some type of material. I think we're going to see an enormous shift in the next decade.
Yeah. And in like 20 years, people will be horrified.
Right.
It's going to happen.
The new fur. That's what people are saying.
They're saying what?
Yeah, leather's the new fur.
Yeah. No, they are. And it's true. Like there'll be a huge shame factor. Like that's leather.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So, which is very exciting. And I've carried vegan leather bags for years. I always had this little button that I had put on. It was kind of nice button. I know that's how to describe a nice button, but and it said not leather.
Right.
And it would, you know, it would cause so many great conversations, you know, on an airplane or, you know, just different things. Cause you know, these bags are just, you know, all this material is really, you know, getting to that quality and look. So
yeah, Yeah. It's so exciting.
Yes.
I'm such a super fan.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you.
To learn more about Stephanie and Uncaged Innovations, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you'd like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I'd like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Bethany Jones, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.